Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Jeremiah chapter 27, which I will call the Yoke of Nebuchadnezzar. We don't need any introduction to this chapter. The theme is the same. Repent or perish, Jerusalem. The Babylonians are coming. That's the general theme, but we will see that the Babylonians are not only coming for Judah and Jerusalem, but they're also coming for the surrounding nations of Israel. So we'll see that. And the time of the prophecy is actually stated in the passage, in the chapter. Unfortunately, there is a textual problem that will confuse the issue a little bit of the time, but we'll deal with that when we get there. So let's start with Jeremiah 27, verses 1 through 7. Early in the reign of Zedekiah, and Zedekiah ruled from 597 to 586, early in the reign of Zedekiah, son of Josiah, Josiah ruled from 640 to 609, king of Judah, this word came to Jeremiah from the Lord. This is what the Lord said to me, make a yoke out of straps and crossbars and put it on your neck. Then send word to the kings of Edom, Moab, Ammon, Tyre, and Sidon through the envoys who have come to Jerusalem to Zedekiah, king of Judah. Give them a message for their masters and say, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Tell this to your masters. With my great power and outstretched arm, I made the earth and its people and the animals that are on it, and I give it to anyone I please. Now I will hand all your countries over to my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. I will make even the wild animals subject to him. All nations will serve him and his son and his grandson until the time for his land comes. Then many nations and great kings will subjugate him. Now verse 1 says, early in the reign of Zedekiah, this is the NIV translation. Zedekiah started ruling in 597, so that ought to tie the time down. Sometime in 597 or shortly thereafter, Jeremiah would be making this prophecy. Unfortunately, there is a textual problem here. Here's what the NIV footnote says. A few Hebrew manuscripts and Syriac have Zedekiah, but most Hebrew manuscripts have Jehoiakim. Now, Jehoiakim ruled from 609 to 598, which is a lot earlier than Zedekiah. And the NIV footnote continues to state that most Septuagint manuscripts do not even have the verse. All right, so let's see, should it be early in the reign of Jehoiakim, which would be somewhere 609, 608, 607, or early in the reign of Zedekiah, 597, 596, about 10 years later. Adam Clark takes this position. It should be Zedekiah because of the manuscript problem that arises here. In other words, he says it is a manuscript error. It should be Zedekiah, not Jehoiakim. Here's what Ellicott says, backing that up. The mention of the name of Zedekiah is king of Judah in Jeremiah 27:3. Let me read that again. Verse 3 says, then send word to the kings of Edom, Moab, Ammon, Tyre, and Sidon through the envoys who have come to Jerusalem to Zedekiah, king of Judah. So verse 3 says Zedekiah. So it makes sense that verse 1 would be Zedekiah too. The mention of the name of Zedekiah, Ellicott says, as king of Judah in Jeremiah 27:3 shows that the Hebrew text has here perpetuated an error due probably to the transcriber or first editor of the collected prophecies. We have to think accordingly of the state of things which followed on the death of Jehoiakim, not the early days, early in the reign of Jehoiakim, but on the death of Jehoiakim and the deposition and exile of Jehoiachin, which happened in 597, and the death of Jehoiakim was 598. So that's what we're going to do. Now, if one were inclined to take the majority of Hebrew manuscripts, Masoretic text manuscripts, and say that it should be early in the reign of Jehoiakim that Jeremiah received this prophecy, that would be a problem, because then Jeremiah would be commanded to make his yoke 11 years before the envoys came to Zedekiah. I said 10 or 11 years. Well, just for the sake of argument, let's assume that Jehoiakim is the proper reading. How might we solve the problem of 11 years passing between Jeremiah made the yoke and when the envoys came to get the message? In the time of Zedekiah, as verse 3 tells us. Well, here's option number 1. We could say verse 1 goes with the prophecy of the preceding chapter. So we would say early in the reign of Jehoiakim, this word, i.e. the word in chapter 26, this word came to Jeremiah from the Lord. And then we start in verse 2 with the prophecy that's in the reign of Zedekiah. The problem with that is there's a word saying S-A-Y-I-N-G, saying, which comes at the end of the verse, namely at the end of verse 1. So let me read verse 1 in the King James. This is also in the Young's Literal Translation, but I'll read the King James. In the beginning of the reign of Jehoiakim, not Zedekiah, but King James says Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, came this word unto Jeremiah from the Lord, comma, saying, and then verse 2 starts. So it sounds like verse 2 should be hooked with verse 1, and that's not a good way to solve our problem by saying that verse 1 belongs with the previous chapter, which was a prophecy in Jehoiakim's reign. So let's look at option number 2. This is from John Calvin. The prophecy was given to Jeremiah in the reign of Jehoiakim, and then Jeremiah concealed the prophecy until Zedekiah's time. That makes sense. There's nothing that says that Jeremiah made the yoke at the same time he got the prophecy. However, it does seem strange to say that he got a prophecy and then waited 11 years or so before he carried it out. So I think Calvin's solution is not probably the correct one. Here's what John Gill says. He said that Jeremiah made the yokes in Jehoiakim's time from 609 in the early years there. And the purpose of that was to signify the subjection of Judah to Nebuchadnezzar, which of course happened in 605 after Carchemish, when Nebuchadnezzar came down and subdued Judah, took Daniel off to Babylon. So the yoke prophecy was carried out, but then the rest of the prophecy was sent to the envoys, the ambassadors of the neighboring nations, 10 or 11 years later in Zedekiah's time. Well, I think the easiest thing to do is just to say it was Zedekiah and some manuscript error. Let's look at some translations. The older translations tend to use Jehoiakim as the proper translation, the American Standard Version, Darby, the King James, the New American Bible, Young's Literal Translation. Now, Darby's note says that it's perhaps Zedekiah. In the text, they say it's Jehoiakim, but in the note, they say it's perhaps Zedekiah, unless Jeremiah 27:3 be wrong. Well, we're not going to add more problems. Verse 3 says it was during the time of Zedekiah, king of Judah, and no, that's not wrong. So Darby kind of fudges on it. The modern translations tend to make it Zedekiah. Bible in Basic English, Home and Christian Standard Bible, the New American Standard Bible, and the NIV. The NASB note says many manuscripts read Jehoiakim, even though the NASB has Zedekiah in the text. And of course, the Home and Christian Study Bible note points out that all of verse 1 is omitted in the Septuagint. So we're just going to take it as Zedekiah here. And verse 2, Jeremiah says, this is what God said to me, make a yoke out of straps and crossbars. I guess that would be leather straps holding the crossbars together. One crossbar to go on top of the ox's neck, one crossbar to go under the ox's neck. So Jeremiah puts a yoke on his head. Now that looks pretty silly, but this is another example of prophetic object lessons. King James has yokes plural, which probably means the top bar and the bottom bar. Now this yoke would certainly occasion comment. Jeremiah stands up, doesn't say where he was when he gave the prophecy, but wherever he was, he's standing there with a yoke on his neck. Now, that's going to grab people's attention. Now in verse 3, Jeremiah tells us that envoys, not the kings themselves, but envoys from Edom, which is south of the Dead Sea, south of Israel, Moab, to the east of the Dead Sea, southern half of the Dead Sea, Ammon right to the north of Moab, Tyre and Sidon up in the northwest on the Mediterranean coast. They had sent envoys to Jerusalem to Zedekiah. Now the question is why were they there? Well, they could have come to congratulate Zedekiah upon his accession to the throne, which happened in 597. It could be that the envoys had come in order to enter into a league with Zedekiah to fight against the king of Babylon. It could be that they were merely residing at his court as ambassadors of nations at peace and in alliance usually do, sort of like an ambassador in residence at a diplomatic mission, but for whatever reason they were there. And so Jeremiah relays to them what God wants them to relay to their kings, their masters, their kings. With my great power and outstretched arm, God says, I made the earth and its people and the animals that are on it, and I give it to anyone I please. Anyone I please. Now, that verse is a great verse for those liberals who all the time complain about the genocide of the Canaanites. The Israelites came in and killed those sweet and innocent Canaanites. It's true they had a few moral failings like sacrificing their sons to idols and their daughters to idols, we'll overlook that because those nasty Jews came in there and took their land. God can give land or take it away from anybody he pleases. The reason he took it away from the Canaanites was because of their horrible sin. The reason he's going to take it from the Jews in 586 is because of the Jews' horrible sin. God's got every right to do what he wants, especially when he's acting judicially. Now in verse 6, Yahweh says that he's going to hand over all your countries, i.e. the Edomites, Moabites, Ammonites, Tyrians, Sidonians. I'm going to hand them all over to Nebuchadnezzar. Of course, that happened in 586 because Nebuchadnezzar came down not just to wipe out Jerusalem, but also the surrounding nations. And in verse 6 at the end, God says, I will even make the wild animals subject to Nebuchadnezzar. Now, some people have said that these animals were subjected to Nebuchadnezzar so that Nebuchadnezzar could use those animals to bring his provision and his armies over into Jerusalem. I don't think so, because it says wild animals. You don't use wild animals to pull your wagon train. But the idea is, this is an a fortiori argument. If an animal cannot escape the yoke of Babylon, by golly, neither can you, Ammon and Moab, Tyre and Sidon, etc. Now in verse 7, Yahweh tells the envoys that, through Jeremiah, all nations will serve Nebuchadnezzar. Now, that doesn't mean all nations in the world. Of course not. It means all nations there surrounding Judah, the nations in the ancient Near East. Here's some examples. Some of these were mentioned in the verse, in verse 3, but there were other nations too. For example, we've got Tyre, Sidon, the Philistines, Edom, Moab, Ammon, Syria, Egypt. All of them are going to go down to the Babylonians, just like Jeremiah has predicted. Now in verse 7, these nations are going to be subject to not only Nebuchadnezzar, but also to Nebuchadnezzar's son. His son was evil Merodach, and he ruled from 562 to 560. Nebuchadnezzar died in 562. Now we have a little problem here. The nations are also said to be subjected to Nebuchadnezzar during the time of Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. In verse 7, all nations will serve him and his son, evil Merodach, and his grandson. Who is the grandson? Well, some of my old commentators said Nabonidus, the last king of Babylon. Some said Belshazzar, who was his son, Nabonidus' son, who ruled as a co-regent with his father. Both of them ruled apparently from 556 to 539. I'm assuming that Belshazzar's co-regency lasted the whole time as his father's kingship. Nabonidus was sort of a nerdy type of king, intellectual. He would study architecture. He was big in the priestly stuff. He emphasized the worship of Sen, the moon goddess, who was the goddess of Haran up in Syria. And he was more interested in scholarly and religious pursuits. He wasn't interested in ruling politically, and so his son Belshazzar ruled, and Belshazzar, in fact, was the one who was drinking from the goblets of the temple when the Persians came in 539 and wiped out Belshazzar right after he saw the handwriting on the wall. We'll read about that in Daniel. So I'm going to assume that the grandson here that's mentioned as subjecting the nations around Israel, Edom, Tyre, Sidon, Moab, Ammon, and so forth, that grandson is Nabonidus. Now, secular history doesn't back that up. It's not really known what the relationship of Nabonidus is to Nebuchadnezzar. So that's one problem. Another problem is there were two kings who ruled between Nebuchadnezzar's son, evil Merodach, and Nabonidus, which would mean, if you think about it, that Nabonidus might not be the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. But these two kings, namely Nergal-Glisser, who ruled from 560 to 556, and Labashi-Marduk, who ruled in 566, they were usurpers. They stole the throne, so they're not counted in the succession. So we're okay. The son of Nebuchadnezzar, who's ruling the nations, is evil Merodach. And evil Merodach in secular sources is called Amel-Marduk. Evil Merodach is the biblical name. Then the grandson, or at least the purported grandson, is Nabonidus, who ruled from 556 till the Persians came in 539. Now, Wikipedia says that Nabonidus was the son-in-law of Nebuchadnezzar, not the grandson. But then Wikipedia adds a question mark, which shows nobody knows exactly what Nabonidus' relationship was with Nebuchadnezzar. And so, if secular history can't determine it, What about the Bible itself? We read in Daniel 5:2, Belshazzar hath said while tasting the wine, to bring in the vessels in gold and of silver that Nebuchadnezzar his father had taken from the temple. And father, of course, can be ancestor, not necessarily your immediate ancestor. And if that were the case, Belshazzar's immediate father was Nabonidus, and so Nebuchadnezzar would be Nabonidus's grandfather. And so I think that's how you solve that little problem. We go to verse 7. God continues to predict. He continues to relay to Jeremiah what Jeremiah is to tell the envoys. Many nations and great kings will subjugate Nebuchadnezzar. Well, it was only one empire that subjugated Nebuchadnezzar, namely Persia in 539. So why the plural? Why great nations and great kings? Well, here's what Benson says. Many nations and kings were incorporated in the Medo-Persian Empire. And that's the simple answer. We go now to Jeremiah 27, verses 8 through 15. Again, God is telling Jeremiah what to tell the envoys of the nations. If, however, any nation or kingdom will not serve Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, or bow its neck under his yoke, I will punish that nation with the sword, famine, and plague, declares the Lord, until I destroy it by his hand. So do not listen to your prophets, your diviners, your interpreters of dreams, your mediums, or your sorcerers who tell you, you will not serve the king of Babylon. They prophesy lies to you that will only serve to remove you far from your lands. I will banish you and you will perish. But if any nation will bow its neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon and serve him, I will let that nation remain in its own land to till it and to live there, declares the Lord. I gave the same message to Zedekiah, king of Judah. I said, bow your neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, serve him and his people, and you will live. Why will you and your people die by the sword, famine, and plague with which the Lord has threatened any nation that will not serve the king of Babylon? Do not listen to the words of the prophets who say to you, you will not serve the king of Babylon, for they are prophesying lies to you. I have not sent them, declares the Lord. They are prophesying lies in my name. Therefore, I will banish you and you will perish, both you and the prophets who prophesied to you. The prophets died when 11 years later in 586, the Babylonians came and burnt the city down, and they killed the prophets, I'm sure. One last remark before we leave this section in verse 13. Yahweh says, why will you and your people die by the sword? That would be the Babylonian sword, but also famine and plague. That just points out that whenever you have a siege, famine and plague are right behind. In fact, usually more people die from the famine and plague in instances of siege warfare than actually die in military actions. We go now to Jeremiah 27, verses 16 through 22, and we will be finished with this chapter. Then I, Jeremiah is now speaking, then I said to the priest and all these people, that would be the envoys, all these people would be the envoys from the neighboring nations. I said to the priest and all these people, this is what the Lord says. Do not listen to the prophets who say, very soon now the articles from the Lord's house will be brought back from Babylon. Now, what were the articles from the Lord's house doing in Babylon? Well, we read that at the time of the 597 deportation, which is right around the time that Jeremiah is prophesying, at the very beginning of Zedekiah's reign, when Nebuchadnezzar took off the nobles of the land, he also took a lot of gold and silver with him that came out of the temple. We read in 2 Chronicles 36, verse 7, also, Nebuchadnezzar took some of the utensils of the Lord's temple to Babylon and put them in his temple in Babylon. The utensils, of course, would be gold and silver, the prongs, the knives, the bowls, things like that that was necessary to do the temple service. The context of 2 Chronicles 36:7 tells us that this was in 597 when Jehoiachin was taken to Babylon when all this happened, and this is right around when Jeremiah is prophesying. It had just happened that all the utensils had been taken to Babylon. We read in 2 Chronicles 36:10, in the spring, Nebuchadnezzar sent for Jehoiachin, and brought him to Babylon, and this is in 597, brought him to Babylon along with the valuable utensils of the Lord's temple. So that's what they were doing there. And Jeremiah says in verse 17, these false prophets are saying those utensils are coming back, that gold and silver, it's coming back. Don't listen to them. They're prophesying lies. Don't listen to them. Serve the king of Babylon. Why should this city become a ruin? In verse 17, If they are prophets and have the word of the Lord, let them plead with the Lord Almighty that the furnishings remaining in the house of the Lord and in the palace of the king of Judah and in Jerusalem not be taken to Babylon. All right, so we need to separate in our minds the gold and silver utensils and the brass things, the furnishings. They're going to be mentioned a little bit later. The furnishings of the temple, that would be the bronze lever, the bronze altar of incense, the 10 water cart stands, they were made out of bronze. They weren't taken. They're heavy and weren't as valuable. That's why they weren't taken. So Jeremiah says, you better prophesy that they not be taken. Well, of course, he knows they are going to be taken in 586. So that's exactly what happened in 586. But now in 597, he's saying, come on, don't say that you're going to get the gold and silver articles back. You better start worrying about the bronze, which is going to go away. Verse 19, for this is what the Lord Almighty says about the pillars, the sea, the movable stands, and the other furnishings that are left in this city. Now, that's the bronze furniture of the temple. I guess we ought to go back and say it's not only the furniture of the temple that's going to end up going back to Babylon. In verse 18, Jeremiah mentions the furnishings of the palace of the king. The royal palace was right a little bit west and down from the temple, so it was a different place. So the Babylonians are not only going to plunder the temple of God, the house of God, they're going to plunder the house of Zedekiah. And verse 19, for this is what the Lord Almighty says about the pillars. Those are the two bronze pillars in front of the temple. I always like these pillars because they've got names. It's interesting to name a pillar. One pillar was called Boaz, which means in him is strength, and Jachin, J-A-C-H-I-N, and I hope I pronounced that right, Jachin, he will establish. Well, Boaz was not strong enough to keep that pillar from being taken away, and Jachin pillar, that pillar was not established. They were made of brass, bronze, brass. Not exactly sure what the difference is between those two metals. They're cheaper metals, but they were carried off in 586. The movable stands in verse 19 are mentioned. Those were 10 bases which were made of brass. They were placed around the temple on the sides, and they had little water basins on the top. The NIV translates them as water carts, which is kind of interesting. Adam Clark says that perhaps the bronze furniture, which is signified by movable stands in the NIV, perhaps refers to the 12 bulls holding the bronze sea up. The bronze sea, of course, was that wide, shallow laver that held water for the priest to wash in to become ritually clean. Now, I mentioned all the furniture in God's house, the temple, and in the king's house, the palace, but also in verse 18, it's also the furnishings that remain in Jerusalem, in the house of the Lord and in the palace of the king of Judah and in Jerusalem, the furnishings in Jerusalem not be taken to Babylon. So that would be the furnishings of the rich people, the wealthy inhabitants of Jerusalem, the noblemen. That's going too. And so Jeremiah says, you better start praying that that not go. So, well, of course, Jeremiah knew that such prayers would be ineffectual. And as a matter of fact, we read in the historical account in 2 Kings 25, verses 13 through 17, this. Now the Chaldeans broke into pieces the bronze pillars of the Lord's temple, that's Boaz and Jachin, the water carts, those are the 10 water carts, 10 bronze bases, and the bronze reservoir, that's the sea, the laver, which were in the Lord's temple, and carried the bronze to Babylon. They also took the pots, the shovels, the wick trimmers, the dishes, and all the bronze articles used in temple service. So that shows that all of the utensils in the temple were not gold. Those had been taken in 597. We're now in 586, and the bronze utensils get taken. The commander of the guards took away the fire pans and the sprinkling basins, whatever was gold or silver, which shows that the Babylonians had left some gold or silver utensils behind in 597. The rest were taken in 586. As for the two pillars, the one reservoir, and the water carts that Solomon had made for the Lord's temple, the weight of the bronze of all these articles was beyond measure. And that's why they probably waited to take that off, because it's so hard to carry. One pillar was 27 feet tall and had a bronze capital on top of it. The capital, encircled by a grating and pomegranates of bronze, stood 5 feet high. The second pillar was the same with its own grating. All gone to Babylon. So we can summarize, the golden things in general went to Babylon in 597, and the brass things in general went in 586 until the temple and royal palace were totally denuded, as well as the houses of the nobles. Now, God says in verse 22 that all of these utensils will be taken to Babylon and stay there until the day I come for them. What was the day that God came for his utensils and his furnishings? Well, that would be 539 BC, when Cyrus the Great's army, the Persians, conquered Babylon, conquered the city of Babylon, and the empire of Babylon, when Belshazzar was having a feast, thinking that his city was secure from the Persians. It wasn't. The Persians dammed up the Euphrates River, made it shallow, walked up the riverbed, went under the portcullises on the outskirts of the city, got through the defenses, and wiped them out, or captured the city. Now, at that time, Belshazzar, the ruling regent at the time, was drinking out of the temple's utensils that belonged to Yahweh. We read that in Daniel 5:2. Under the influence of the wine, Belshazzar gave orders to bring in the gold and silver vessels that his predecessor Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple in Jerusalem. That would be in 597. So that the king and his nobles, wives, and concubines could drink from them. So Nebuchadnezzar was having a good old time with God's holy instruments, those which had been sanctified, consecrated to him, separated from profane use, and they were at a drunken feast, drinking out of Yahweh's temples. Bad career move, because very shortly thereafter, the Persians came and made them captive. The king, Belshazzar, his nobles, his wives, his concubines, drinking from God's vessels, they're toast. So at the end of verse 22, God says, I will bring them back, bring the vessels back to Jerusalem, and restore them to this place, restore them to Jerusalem, which happened when the Jews came back under Cyrus's decree, which happened right after 539, maybe 538, 537. People disagree on the dates. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with Jeremiah chapter 27, and we are now prepared to go to chapter 28, which I will entitle Hananiah the False Prophet. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.